is the Grinlian Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's Beyond the Fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Grinlian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
That's right, and from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma in the depths of the hollow earth, broadcasting live from the Grinlian Bunker here in the heart of the spy capital of the Southeast, I am Micah Hanks, and you've locked into the Grinlian Report, your weekly foray into the unexplained. Happy always to be your host, along with my co-host and producer, Mr. Tyler Pittman. Tyler, good evening, my friend.
Good evening, all.
Good evening, my little ghoul. Look at you. You're all ready for Halloween, man. You've got your...
I am.
What is that thing that you're wearing around your neck? A scarf? A handkerchief?
A spider kerchief.
A spider kerchief? Wow. Fantastic. Hello to everyone in the chat room, your weekly favorite podcast of the unexplained and downright unusual variety. Always glad to be providing you the latest in news and insight from beyond the fringe. On tonight's program, how the government convinces you to be complicit with monitoring. And we'll also be talking right around the bottom of the first hour, in fact, and we're going to let that carry on over into the second hour. We're going to get into a heady discussion about science of the unexplained, the paraphysical nature of the universe. That's right. We'll be talking with a good friend of mine. He's been on the program before once in the past. We're long overdue for having him again, and in fact, he's actually going to also be a speaker at this year's Paradigm Symposium 2013. That's right, it's Thomas Fusco, author of Behind the Cosmic Veil. Tom was gracious enough to join us right here within 2 weeks of the beginning of Paradigm Symposium. I'm so excited. Robert Schock, Robert Bavall, Scott Walter, Micah Hanks. Really? Oh, yeah, Scotty. Scotty's going to be there. It's going to be great. I can't wait. And I hope to see all of you there just as well at the Union Depot in downtown St. Paul, Minnesota. I hear the weather's actually beautiful up there. Probably warmer there than it is right here in Asheville where I am. We've actually had a little bit of a cold snap the last couple of days, Tyler. But don't be afraid because, you know, this recent study I just read says that, according to scientists, climate control is highly unlikely. You'd be more likely to find a mummy in an ancient pyramid than to control the weather utilizing the technology that humans have harnessed in the present day. Isn't that reassuring?
I thought it was due to mummies.
That's right. Oh, well, anyway, Natalia, I got something right off the bat I want to share with you. This is beautiful. I'm going to play a PSA for you, okay, that the Ad Council has put out. I think we're going to start playing this one on the show.
I hope it's not the Wounded Warrior Project.
No, it's not. No, check this out. No, we're going to just play the audio, and then we're going to, okay, someone in the chat room is asking if the show has started. Yes, we are live. Refresh the page if you're having issues there. Folks in the chat room, please help them out. Help your friends. It's kind of like going to a jam, okay? The more experienced musicians help the less experienced musicians. Well, if you're new to the Grinlian chat room, and in fact, if you're not going at all, be sure and visit grinlianreport.com/podcast and radio. There are dashes between each word. Visit the podcast and radio page there, and right below the actual media player is the chat room. And you're missing the biggest, best block party of the esoteric that takes place anywhere on the World Wide Web on Tuesday nights right there at grinlianreport.com. Check it out. Now, Tyler, I'm going to play this audio for you here. And then we're going to have a little commentary before we get Mr. Fusco on the program, because Tom is a guy who has so much to say, we've got to give him at least an hour and a half. He really could go on for hours and hours. He and I can't get on the phone call, and have a social call without talking damn near 2 hours. And I very seldom have time for that, but Tom is just a brilliant guy. Someone I truly enjoy. I relish being able to talk with him. I'm sure you will, too.
Well, it reminds me of my calls with you. They don't call you the Mouth of the South for nothing.
I know, right? Seriously. I live up to the name. I'm not going to disappoint. Well, check this out. Okay. This PSA is titled, First Video Chat Ever. Just check it out.
This is Louisa. Recently, she got help going online.
Okay, so hit that green button.
This is her first video chat.
Oh, Louisa?
Oh my gosh, there she is.
And the first time she's seen her niece in 5 years.
It's so good to see you.
See what the internet can help you do at everyoneon.org or call 1-855-387-9166 to find a free training class near you.
Oh, I've missed you.
Brought to you by Connect to Compete and the Ad Council.
Do you see what this is? This is an online awareness PSA. Okay, put out by, I think they said it, everyoneonline.org, I think is what they called it. Anyway, the gist of this is Well, exactly what it sounds like. Getting everyone online and video chatting.
Yes, we need to open up the spy gates.
Exactly. Yes, let's encourage all the good little slaves to get online and chat and video chat so that we can record everything that's being said.
Quite honestly, I mean, the video chat tech's been around for a while, and yeah. I never use it. It's like, why would I want to stare at another disheveled human being while I'm talking to them?
You know, it's funny because, Tyler, in Planning Paradigm Symposium this year, Gary Evans is in London. Our program director for the KGRA program, Race Hobbs, is in Kansas City. Scotty is in Wisconsin. Now, Scotty and I, every now and then, we actually will video chat, you know, because he's usually got the kids running around and, you know, they always like to see Uncle Micah. But when I talk with Race, never video. When I talk with Gary, never video. When I talk with John Ward, never video. I tell you, man, it's like those of us who are savvy, we know that we don't want this intrusive invasion. We don't care what our friend is going to see. It's what everybody else who's monitoring the call, what they're going to see.
Yeah, we know all of this data is basically filed in a system somewhere.
Well, it is. It absolutely is. I mean, we know for a fact. There was an article, I think, that Wired had covered a couple of months ago where they were talking about how not video information. I'm sure the video information is archived just as well. But actual information sent in links and text in chat features, such as Skype for online video conferencing, that information is actually recorded and kept by a Microsoft protocol of some sort. Do you remember seeing that story? I don't have it in front of me.
Not that one particular, but I do remember the Adobe issue doing the same thing, where Adobe Updater or Adobe Acrobat Reader is constantly running as a login item without your permission, pinging back and forth the home base.
God, talk about...
Which is located next door to this new NSA facility in Utah?
Yeah, I know. That was a front cover story for Wired.com, or Wired, the actual magazine. You know, anyway. Yeah, so I've followed this for quite a while, but I just think, I mean, it's hilarious. What's this way? Let me see if I can... we'll come back to it later. And I want to get the name of the address. I think just for fun, maybe we'll play that PSA on the program from time to time. Doing our citizen duty, you know, our civic duty here on this program, giving airtime to PSAs for public service announcements that may better and enrich your life.
Yes, we're here to inform citizen slave.
We certainly are. Look at this, man. Look in the chat room. People are going nuts. Oh, wait. They're going nuts because I think our guest for tonight may actually be in the chat room. Ah, there he is, TP Fusco. Hot dog. Look at that. Oh, this is going to be a good night. I can tell already. You know, Tom and I actually have met. Most of the people who are going to be speaking at Paradigm Symposium this year, we have actually met. I've met Chris O'Brien, Robert Bavall. I met him and Tom for the first time, along with, there were a lot of people. It was that big secret, you know, clandestine meeting back in November.
Yeah, and unfortunately, one of the members I heard passed away this week after setting himself on fire on the National Mall.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was in poor taste, Tom. Yes, I'm a mind-controlled meat slave as a result of that event. No, seriously, I sat there and I ate oysters and drank martinis and talked about religion and the nature of good and evil with Tom Fusco in a little corner table. I should ask him about this on the air because I know he'll know exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, here's everybody, you know, hobnobbing, you know, it's like all the celebrities of the paranormal and everything. And granted, I wasn't trying to be, you know, ungracious to my hosts. You know, it was wonderful to be able to be there with Stanton Friedman and, Grant Cameron. I met Grant for the first time there at the airport. Chip Coffey and I hung out Lloyd Pye I met, and actually Lloyd Pye and Tom Fusco and I spoke on the way to the hotel on the way back from the airport once we first arrived. So, I mean, there were all kinds of fantastic people there. No, I haven't gone in for my neuro-linguistic deprogramming since then.
Well, you're having your handler on tonight to kind of put you into shape.
Fusco, that's the whole gig here, is that he's actually my handler. That's what's actually going on. He's probably loving this here. So anyway, well, when we go to break, after the break, we're gonna bring on Tom. But in other news, before we actually get into that commercial segment here, Tyler brought this to my attention before we went to air. This is very interesting. Weekend attacks on Arkansas's electrical grid have left 10,000 people without power. But here's the message that apparently has been left by the apparent attackers. Quote, you should have expected. But then it says, us. Notice, Tyler, us is you.s. dot. In other words, you should have expected us, or you should have expected
ultra slaves,
or United States, or
that doesn't make sense.
The Uganda situation. It could be any number of things, Tyler.
That's likely.
Upton Sinclair.
I'm trying to think of some now.
Let's see. I can think of more than you can.
Unwashed shorts.
That works too. That's actually very good. Yeah. So more than 10,000 people, as I understand it, are still out of power following a blackout that occurred Sunday following an... Well, I think that number probably has been amended by now, but people apparently are still out of power. I did hear from Race Hobbs this morning at KGRA, so I know that our friends at the KGRA radio network are still online and operable. But apparently a major transmission line in the region around Cabot, Arkansas... Is it Cabot or Cabot? I think it's Cabot, right?
I don't know. Arkansas has like this fetish for using Middle Eastern sounding names. Mm-hmm. I actually visited Palestine, Arkansas.
Yeah. You know, one of the first times you ever were on this program, you were in West Memphis, right?
That's right.
Yeah. You were in West Memphis in conjunction with the release of Damien Echols and the West Memphis 3.
I got to see Eddie Vedder.
Eddie Vedder was there, yeah, walking out with him. You know, we still got the photos up on the website, in fact. That was a fantastic program. But, so apparently, I don't know if this is actually being referred to as a terrorist attack, but people are saying, though we remain confident that we'll identify the person or persons responsible for these incidents, the FBI has apparently said in a press release, quote, that they are enlisting the public's help to be our eyes and our ears. Oh, imagine that. An agency like the FBI actually asking the citizenry to be their eyes and ears. Don't you guys have enough eyes and ears of your own?
Yeah, I know. You're in, like, the pockets of everyone in America.
Everybody's pocket. Everybody's bedroom, everybody's office, you know, seriously, they're going to install cameras in the shower stalls before it's all said and done.
Just like, what is it, Porky's?
Yeah.
Just like this giant camera.
Oh, man. Yeah, 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 yeah. You caught the reference there. When, I don't know, this is really strange, but apparently, yes, there was this cryptic message. The FBI has apparently released additional details about this. And according to their press release, the person or persons responsible for this incident took a tractor that had been parked inside a fenced area at the intersection of Poston Road and John Shelton Road and drove it through a locked cattle gate. We believe the person or persons drove the tractor south on John Shelton Road. Okay, none of that's really that important. I'm looking for the juicy part. You should have expected us, is what they said. When did they say it? Why did they say it? And who did they say it to? And who are they talking about when they say U.S.? You know what's funny? This report right here was issued by Forbes.com. There is no mention, aside from the actual headline, the title of the article, there's no mention of this cryptic message, you should have expected us. No explanation even given. Maybe this article was updated and that portion was conveniently omitted.
Yeah, to me, when I first read it, my first reaction was something about Anonymous, because it's, you know, expect us is kind of like their mantra.
Yeah, yeah. It's odd. I don't know. That's strange. We'll have to keep our eyes peeled on this one, Tyler. As usually is the case, there's probably more here than actually meets the eye. Okay, I think we're actually up on a break. We're going to go ahead and pay the bills. But when we come back, we're going to be talking with none other than Thomas Fusco. He'll be probably one of the most anticipated speakers at Paradigm Symposium this year. And therefore, we get him a little early here on the Graylian Report. Although I hope to see every one of you out there wearing team colors in full regalia at Paradigm here in just under 2 weeks in St. Paul. I'm Micah Hanks. It is the Graylian Report. Stay with us. We'll be back right after this. Micah Hanks of the Graylian Report here. Today I want to talk to you about Intrepid Magazine, the new leader in clear and reasoned thinking in an unpredictable world, and the official magazine of the Graylian Report. Intrepid features the latest in-depth analysis of science, culture, conspiracy, politics, and unexplained phenomena. You'll get expert commentary from an incredible cast of seasoned writers and researchers, as well as interviews and insights from some of the biggest names in the field. And best of all, you can subscribe today for just $14.95. It's Intrepid Magazine. Boldly going. Subscribe today by visiting IntrepidMagazine.com. intrepidmag.com. And coming soon, look for Intrepid on Nook and Kindle e-readers. For most of us, chocolate is a guilty pleasure. Come on, admit it. You've got a sweet tooth just like the rest of us. But if I told you that eating chocolate was actually really good for your health and happiness, you'd probably say I was in La La Land. Hey, I wouldn't argue. Here's why. Every batch of the fine handcrafted chocolates at La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate is made from scratch, using organic, fair trade, and 100% natural ingredients. From the first bite, you'll know you're enjoying true quality, and the heart shape isn't the only way you'll feel the love. In fact, every chocolate from La La Land Organics is made by Melody Dawn Germain herself, and according to her own special recipe. You'll be enjoying Ecuadorian heirloom cacao in every bite, along with a selection of wholesome herbs and superfood supplements that not only make La La Land Organics delicious, but really good for your health and happiness. They're all natural, gluten-free, and no dairy, soy, or refined sugars are included, which help them boost your energy, reduce stress, and promote longevity. And as if healthy organic chocolates didn't remove the guilt factor enough, Melody ships all her orders in reusable, food-grade, non-BPA containers designed to eliminate toxic residue and cut down on environmental waste. Be sure and visit Melody's website at www.mdgnewmedia.com. That website again is mdgnewmedia.com. Just click chocolate in the toolbar at the top of the page. You can't miss it. And while you're there, you can see a full list of the ingredients that will be sure to put a smile on your face. And I promise, it's guilt-free. La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate. Why wait? That website again is mdgnewmedia.com. What do you mean, Tyler? I was not bluffing. No. I think someone tried to call me on what they perceived as being a bluff, though. Just as soon as I talk about incentives being put out there to get people online and video chatting, what happens? The stream goes down. The page over here reloads. The Hadels literally must have been chewing the wires that time. Something was going on.
Yeah, I know it.
I think we're back on the airways. I think this is actually live and happening now. No, I know it is, in fact. We adhere to a kind of broadcast excellence on this program that few in their lifetimes will ever experience. You, my friends, get to experience it on a weekly basis here every Tuesday night on the Graylian Report. In fact, some of you actually get the bi-weekly bit. What? What, there's another program? That's right, yes. If you are in the chat room, for instance, right now, look immediately to the right of the chat room page and you'll see a great big banner. It has me pointing at you in a very menacing way. That's the Sunday show on KGRA. Little different show. Who knows, Tyler, before it's all said and done, there may be other shows.
Some interesting news.
We're just never able to escape the inevitable, which is we're broadcasters for life, I guess. Anyway, welcome back to the program. It is the Graylian Report. Glad to have you here. In mere moments, we're going to be discussing with a gentleman who I love to talk with, and he's truly one of the most wise and erudite individuals that you'll ever hope to meet. He's going to be one of our speakers at Paradigm Symposium this year also. And I'm going to tell you, if you listen to what this guy has to say, and I sincerely hope that I implore all of our listeners to do just that, you're going to learn something. He is Thomas Fusco. He will be a speaker at Paradigm Symposium. He's the author of Behind the Cosmic Veil, and he is our guest tonight on the Graylian Report. Thomas Fusco, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me, man. It's great to be here.
It's good to talk to you. I mean, we always have so much to say, and I let the cat out of the bag because, you know, my life is, for the most part, an open book. You and I, we very seldom actually have time for this, but when we do have time to get together and talk, the conversation is boundless, and it can go on sometimes for hours. And I, last time we had a chance to talk, unfortunately, it had more to do with business because we're getting ready for this great big shindig up there in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And I said, you know, Tom, let's get you back on the program so that we can really dig into this stuff. Let's do a little more than an hour, and since we've had some technical difficulties tonight, we may even go a little later if we need to, because I want to give you due time to talk about you and your work, some of what you'll be talking about at Paradigm Symposium, and some of the stuff that literally just goes so far out there, I don't think most people in the unexplained community are even addressing it. So, Tom, it's truly my pleasure to have you here on the program. For those who are unfamiliar with your work, and I know that we've got a lot of new listeners since the last time you graced the airwaves with us, let's start with your beginning, what led you into your research, what your research is, and what you're doing today in the continuance of that research.
Well, how I started out in this vein, I had some experiences in my late teens and early 20s. I don't normally discuss them on the radio, but needless to say, they caused me to call into question the model of reality that was taught to me in science and physics. And so when I took a look at things like parapsychology and paranormal phenomena, especially coming from a place where having experienced things like this, it was no longer kind of an armchair intellectual kind of an exercise, had to accept the fact that these things are real. And so since these things occur naturally, in other words, they've been going on for a long time, long before we even developed modern technology, they have to have something fundamentally to do with the way the universe is put together. So I felt very confident that we had to go and take a look at the paradigm through which we look at physical reality and come up with something that would not only still accommodate our observations and findings that we have to date, but would also incorporate supernatural phenomena, paranormal phenomena, and even traditional religious principles, spiritual principles. And so after a long time working on it, I came up with such a conceptual model, and I call it my theory of supergeometry or supergeometrics. And when I thought I had it just right, Micah, that's when I published my book back in 2011. And I've been talking about it ever since. There's been some interesting scientific experimental work that I hope we can get to talk about before the end of the show.
We certainly will.
Have actually added a lot of validity and confirmation for this model.
Yes.
So that's what it's all about.
This book, by the way, and for those who aren't familiar with it, you know, it's maybe one of my favorite books that addresses unexplained phenomena that's come out in recent years. In just over 400 pages, Tom really kind of breaks everything down in a highly scientific way, but in a way that also accommodates for the spiritual and for aspects of the unknown universe that nonetheless, at times, in those strange circumstances that we call paranormal happenings, these things become apparent and available to us. Now, the book is called Behind the Cosmic Veil, A New Vision of Reality Merging Science, the Spiritual, and the Supernatural. I'm going to tell you, I was looking at the Amazon product detail page for this book earlier today. I own the book, in fact, but I just wanted to go and take a look and just see what the reviews were saying. And Tom, you don't have anything but 5- and 4-star reviews for this book. That, for Amazon crowds, that's really, really good.
Well, yes, and I'm very grateful for it, and especially some of those reviews, and also in some, you know, private messages I've received where readers have told me that the book essentially changed their lives or changed completely the way they look at the world around them and themselves.
Well, you know, I think that in order to really get into what this book and what your theories entail, I'll just be honest with you. I've heard you on a lot of programs over the last few years since this book came out. The Graylian Report was one of the first interviews that you'd done. You've gone on to do all the big ones since then. And yet I've heard so many times, with all due respect to other interviewers, I've heard people who are doing the interviewing asking you what I would consider to be kind of dumb or softball questions. So I want to take this in a different direction tonight, Tom. I want to ask you, rather than some simple arbitrary question, I want to ask you, take us to the beginning. Take us where we need to go, according to your own justifications, in order to begin to understand this new vision, this new paradigm that you discuss in the book.
Well, I think the first piece of work that I really had to tackle was what kind of a paradigm, what kind of a perspective could we look at the universe with that would allow us to understand or at least get some kind of a handle on all the various kinds of phenomena that we witness and experience, and that also needed to be something that was scientifically relevant. Most authors and quote-unquote experts did address this particular kind of field, paranormal or the supernatural, focus specifically on that. And, you know, I think that when you do that, you kind of look at something in a vacuum, so to speak, where the implications of these kinds of events is far greater. So it eventually occurred to me that what we're looking at is a concept in modern physics that they call information. Now, we talk about information commonly, as we know in science. We'll use terminology that is in the common language, but means something a little bit different when it's used in a scientific concept,
right,
or context. So what occurred to me is that this idea of information, which modern physics uses as an extension of the traditional conservation laws that we were taught in school, matter and energy can neither be created nor destroyed. Modern physics says the information from which matter and energy is assembled itself can neither be created nor destroyed. The difference with my work was to come to the realization that that concept is actually the fundamental paradigm of the universe. And when we look at it that way, we actually find that we can come to a one-sentence definition of what everything is, of what the universe is. And that definition is that the universe is an expression of materialized and materializing information. Now, suddenly, when we take a look at it that way, we find that virtually everything that we can observe and experience in reality can fall under that heading. And it's the only concept that I've found that is so all-encompassing. So when we look, let's say, at paranormal or supernatural phenomena, in the paranormal, when we actually get these strange things like disembodied voices or EVPs or see apparitions, these kinds of things, what we are actually seeing is the spontaneous manifestation or the materialization of information. And so if that becomes a fundamental paradigm of the universe, that the whole universe is a materialization of the information that was contained within the quantum singularity from which the Big Bang emerged, then we should be able to conduct examinations and experiments on paranormal phenomena that will give us the missing ingredients, so to speak, that we need to use to solve this fundamental question about what is reality and to solve some of the mysteries that face modern science today.
You know, it happens so often when I do talk with you, Tom, that I start getting those little tingles up and down my spine. You've hit on a couple of things here right off the bat that, you know, if I may, I have to, you know, I guess I probably brought this up to you before in the past, but, you know, I have to say right now, when you talk about the lattice, the infrastructure, the very element of the universe, the unseen element that is the essence of what we see around us, the pre-material being a actual information system from which the, what we might call, I guess, the post-material erupts and occasionally forms directly in front of us. You know, that information system, that reminds me so much of, and God, I wonder sometimes, when we build computers, I know you've got some background in computer science too, so maybe this will hit home with you, but when we work with computers, I don't think people ever necessarily built computers and thought, oh, we're going to play God, we're going to build Adam here in our image, but computers behave so much like humans, and in an odd way, the universe at times behaves a lot like a computer program. What do you think about the possibility that this information substructure that you talk about whether or not it's actually a computer program, is there a similarity, I guess, in your own mind to the very kinds of computer programs, networks, information substructures that we create and that we utilize, like the World Wide Web today? Are we, in other words, is the art of our technocracy, I guess might be a word for it, is the art and the output of our technocracy mirroring the actual lattice of the universe?
Metaphorically, I think it is. And there may be some practical correlations with that as well. I mean, if we stop and think about it for a moment, and here's the beauty of this paradigm. When we take this paradigm about materialized and materializing information, and we begin to apply it to certain mysteries that we still have, that we're still trying to find solutions for, we find some interesting ideas coming out of it. For example, a computer is a product of the human mind, of many human minds, of course, working in unison over time, but it still is a product of our particular mental function, which is a part of the very convolutions and electrochemical constituents of our physical brains. Now, the physical brain is a subset of the physical universe. The physical brain is actually a subsystem that has been emerged. It emerged from the main system, which is the universe. Therefore, the human brain is built according to the laws and principles. It's actually configured to the laws and principles that the greater universe is configured from. Now, the next part of this to take a look at is that the human brain, if we, and people have looked at the consciousness and psyche and mind from many different perspectives, but if we use this paradigm about materialized and materializing information and apply it to the human brain, we find that the human brain has the capability of materializing information. This, to me, is the single most unique quality of the human being when compared to any other material assemblage that we know of in the universe. Everybody at home that's listening to this, you're probably listening over a computer in your home. If you take a look at everything around you, the computers, the monitor, the telephone, the desk that it's sitting on, the house that you're in, the chair that you're sitting on, the clothes that you wear, all these things are materializations of information that came from the human brain. Many of these things could never occur by themselves in nature, regardless to what the quantum philosophers have tried to pass on to people.
Yes.
The universe behaves according to very strict constraints. You're not going to put your Thanksgiving turkey in the oven and open it up 3 hours later to find a Wankel rotary engine.
Right.
there's certain constraints. So here we have the human brain basically producing, materializing physical structures that mirror the laws and principles that govern the greater universe that gave rise to the actual construction of that brain. And so in that sense, not only is a computer kind of functionally like a creational machine, but the very structure of it and how it works is mirrors the structure of the brain that produced it, which mirrors the structure of the universe that produced the brain.
Ah, that's a good point, Tom. And I don't want to stray too far off topic, discussing your book and your research, but I do want to ask you very quickly as a brief aside. I've discussed with you before and with other colleagues of mine the idea that rather than actually being the source of consciousness, that the human brain or any other intelligent physical source, or I hesitate to say other brains because you don't know how other life might come to or evolve to exist in other parts of the universe, or if it would even be recognized as life as you or I would know it. It may not even be physical, but nonetheless, in the context of discussing humanity, I consider the brain and the human assemblage as being a consciousness conduit, something that takes an existing source or an existing presence, an existing substance, trying to define consciousness is a difficult thing, and of course philosophers have probably failed at really succeeding at doing that since time immemorial, and so I won't seek to try and do that here. But nonetheless, if it is something that can be filtered from an external source, we are merely receptors. Do you think that computers, being of our own design but functioning in a very similar capacity as you've kind of outlined there, will we ever get to a point where a computer can do what human brains do with the funneling of and the reception of consciousness?
I think that within the constraints of what can be constructed by a human brain with the materials that are around it, yes, but to those constraints, just as our human brain, although it mirrors the laws and principles that govern the greater universe, there are limits to what the human brain can do to reproduce that universe, because it's only a subset of that greater system. So our creations, our materializations, are actually subsets of our own brain. So within those limitations, yes, I think it's possible. And when you talk about this philosophical concept of the human consciousness, and you'll notice that I try to stay away from those kinds of ambiguous terms.
Sure.
I try to stick to the human brain as the term that I use, because we have some kind of a solid physical touch point there.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you know, is kind of a fixed commodity, so to speak, where the other terms are a bit hazy and difficult to contain or quantify. If we look at the idea that the Big Bang, the nucleus, the quantum singularity from which all the universe arose, containing the information to shape the universe, because once it became physical, we have no idea how it got the shape and the form that it did. We know about how the substance came from, but we don't know how the universe got the order that it did. So you might say that the materialization that resulted in the universe actually represents a system by which the universe is a continuing conduit for that information. The universe is still expanding, and so something is causing that expansion to occur. And I believe that this process that occurred at the beginning of the universe is continuous. It is still unfolding and still occurring. In that case, the universe is actually still serving as a physical conduit for that information that exists still non-physically. And so the human brain, being in the image of that universe, at least the creational aspects of it, also could be acting as such a conduit.
Oh, man. People out there in Gradio Land, please prepare yourselves. You're going to need aspirin or ibuprofen on hand, because you may have a headache after you have this conversation. But it's the kind of conversation that I relish. I'm not happy unless I'm feeling new wrinkles forming on my gray matter. We're talking with Thomas Fusco. He's the author of Behind the Cosmic Veil, A New Vision of Reality, Merging Science, the Spiritual, and the Supernatural. Before we run out of time this hour, Tom, I do want to, because next hour I presume we're going to get into some of the actual physical experimentation and the empirical data that you feel supports what you in the book outline as super geometric theory. But I do want to ask you now, as a precursor to that and those things yet to come, why super geometric theory? Why do we call it that? What is the use of the term? What does it mean? And what do we hope to try and understand by studying it?
The idea of a source of information, a database, a matrix, a blueprint, a pattern, if you will, that exists outside of space-time, but through which and from which all the order and structures that we see in space-time, which is the physical universe, where all those structures arise from, is an old idea. It dates back all the way to Plato. He talked about something he called forms. Mm-hmm. When we look at the Bible, Judeo-Christianity, the Old Testament speaks of it in terms of the wisdom of God. The New Testament speaks of it in terms, in the first paragraph of the Gospel of John, he uses the Greek philosophical word logos, that we translate into English as word. But that Greek philosophical term means those very things: mind, thought, idea, structure, form, matrix. There really isn't any exact English equivalent for it. But it's clear that it exists, well, according to religion, in a spiritual realm that really isn't physical. We go into modern times, we look at different ideas from very well-established and respected mainstream physicists like David Bohm. He called the same idea implicate order.
Yes.
That gave rise to the explicate order of time, space, matter, and energy. Look at David Finkelstein. He calls it coherent superpositions. John Wheeler called it pregeometry. If we want to get into parapsychology, we can look at Edgar Cayce, who called it the Akasha.
Uh-huh.
My particular term for it is supergeometry, and the reason being is because this is a superset of the geometry that actually defines the structures and the forms of everything that is in the universe. I felt it was a scientifically more consistent term because the prefix super is common in physics to use to define a superset of a set that we're discussing. And geometry was a concept that people could really wrap around, you know, their minds around. So this is where the idea of supergeometry comes in, that gives rise to the physical geometry that we see in space-time.
Well, you know, and I wanted to ask you about that, in fact, the connection with the Akashic record. So it's interesting that you bring up Edgar Cayce, because, again, this ancient concept of the Akashic record, there being an actual information system that, I guess, to utilize modern terminology, we could state that the Akashic record is believed to exist outside time as we know it, and the continuum of linear time, in other words, the space-time continuum. It's interesting that you make that comparison, because I'd often wondered that and wondered if you had made that comparison yourself. Of course, I should always expect that you will. You're very, very up to speed on these sorts of things. Tom, I tell you what, when we come back, I want to get into that a little bit more with you, and I also want to talk about some of the experimental research that's been going on, not just on your own behalf, but along with a few other researchers out there who are, if anything, conducting experiments that may help justify some of what you're talking about. I think it's fascinating stuff. We're talking with Thomas Fusco, and when we come back here on the Grayling Report, we will pick up again and complete this discussion. There's so many directions this place could certainly go, and I'm sure it will. I am Micah Hanks, along with Tyler Pittman. We'll be back with Thomas Fusco again right after the break, so stay with us.
In 2013, mysteries of the past will reshape our future. Paradigm Symposium 2013 in Minneapolis, Minnesota, October 17th through the 20th. Speakers will include Scott Wolter of History Channel's America Unearthed, Egyptologist Robert Bavall, Dr. Robert Schock, and many more. Tickets are available online at ParadigmSymposium.com. Mankind's greatest mysteries brought to the present with new understanding. Visit ParadigmSymposium.com.
Imagine a place, beautiful, green, sloping mountains, and a rich, mysterious window into our ancient past. It's a culture the likes of which you won't find anyplace else. And while the place I'm describing is in Vermont, it's also the home of Inner Traditions, publishers of fine books on mind, body, and spirit for more than three decades. Inner Traditions are internationally recognized publishers of everything from occult to esoteric and spiritual books, as well as the leading authorities on alternative health, holistic healing, sacred sexuality, altered states of consciousness, and so much more. And frankly, it's not the kind of information you'll find just anywhere. Exploring the inner secrets of humanity requires thinking outside the box. And when it comes to Inner Traditions, the name says it all. All you have to do to learn more is visit innertraditions.com, and you can receive a free catalog that will tell you all about their latest books and newest authors. That's Inner Traditions and Baron Company, publishers of fine esoteric books for more than three decades. Find them online at innertraditions.com.
This is the Greenian Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's beyond the fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Greenian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
Broadcasting from the dark heart of Appalachia every Tuesday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. In what I affectionately call the spy capital of the Southeast, Asheville, North Carolina. I am Micah Hanks, your host. This is the Greenian Report. Thank you for spending time with us, as always. A number of ways you can get involved with what we do. You can always email me, info@MicahHanks.com, and I'd like to direct everybody over to the website. That is GRAINReport.com. A lot of stuff, if you haven't been visiting the website, that you can learn about on a daily basis. We have daily news and updates that appear there on the main page. But we've also got the Greenian Bookstore, featuring just about everything I've ever written, including this new book, The Ghost Rockets. That's right, Mystery Missiles and Phantom Projectiles in Our Skies. I'll be giving the first public lecture about this book at Paradigm Symposium this year. And then finally, of course, podcast and radio, very, very far right of the toolbar there. We'll get you all the information about how you can interact with the program, listen live on Tuesday nights, and of course, interact with the live chat. Lots of people in the live chat tonight. Gosh, look at them. Look at all the folks in there. I'm going to have to upgrade my chat server if we keep having so many people in there on Tuesday nights. That's a high-class problem. Very much a high-class problem. Anyway, welcome back to the program. Glad to have you with us. And, of course, glad to be joined tonight by none other than Thomas Fusco. Now, Tom, when we left off in the last segment, we had just barely kind of gotten into the meat of this discussion, and we had to kind of tail off with that comparison to your supergeometric theory and other different kinds of disciplines and philosophical conceptions that have come together over time. One of those was Edgar Cayce and the Akashic Record. I don't know if you'd like to elaborate any on that at all, but since we had to cut off for the break in the last segment, I did want to offer to allow you to comment further if you so desire.
Well, yeah, and I should mention, Mike, and I'm sure most of your listening audience is aware of this, that modern physics works under a fundamental philosophy that all of reality is physical, and that what is physical is all of reality. It doesn't include the idea that there could be something extra physical, or what I call superphysical, that is actually a part of reality. And the physical universe is another part of reality, so that reality is actually bigger than the physical universe. I think that's important to point out. Another concept based on my work and what I've come up with is sometimes people think about this information, or this Akasha, whatever you'd like to call it, mm-hmm. as underlying physical reality. I say that it's actually a superstructure. It actually is over. It's an overlay to reality, and physical reality is actually a subset of that. It's almost like saying what most people call the subconscious, you might more correctly call it the superconscious.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. You know, I'm glad you addressed what you just said in the context of there being reality beyond what we perceive or know to exist as the physical universe. I believe that that's very much the case. And to use a sort of simplistic but nonetheless familiar example to illustrate that, some of you out there remember the Men in Black films. I mean, they're not that old. I think the last one came out, what, last year? Anyway, at the end of the first one, you remember at the very end they show the universe, and it's panning out, and it's going farther and farther and farther out, and then eventually our little universe is contained within a marble, in a game of marbles being played by these, well, I guess what you might call superphysical entities, somewhere out there beyond our own physical universe. Very well could be that that's the case. Maybe it isn't actually so simple as that, but again, it's a funny kind of a reference to illustrate, I think, a timeless concept, that there probably are things that exist beyond what we know to exist. But now, Thomas, what's interesting to me is that at the crux of your theory with regard to supergeometry, we are getting into the realm of trying to understand why, what we would call, and again, we have to utilize terminology that people are familiar with, as you and I have discussed before in the past. We have to utilize terminology that is familiar and that is effective for communicating these ideas so that we can better understand what we are dealing with. Now, therefore, I'm going to utilize paranormal in this context to elucidate that there are things that we cannot explain, but that nonetheless we see erupting into physicality right in front of us. This is, in essence, where you go with the book and you seek to address this and how this could happen. If we had to try and break that down right now for the listener, what exactly is happening when a paranormal occurrence takes place? A person sees an apparitional form or some sort of a luminosity, a strange physical something occurring in our consensus reality that we cannot explain. We know it is the materialization based on information that may exist outside our physical universe. How does it happen? And when it happens, what is actually happening?
Well, this is a good point. It was one of the early hurdles that I had to overcome in dealing with this body of evidence that we call the paranormal, in that, first of all, we needed to give it a real good definition. Traditionally, the paranormal, quote-unquote, has been used for this kind of catch-all basket to throw anything strange or unusual into it. And that's not good enough. We needed to come up with a more specific definition for it. The other thing that we had to do, and as you know from reading my book, I strive at all times as much as possible to express these ideas in terms that would be scientifically relevant and meaningful, that a scientist could actually take the way that I phrase these ideas and get some sort of a handle on them, instead of the traditional, you know, philosophical or metaphysical or even religious kinds of ways to define these things. And I did want to mention real quick, mm-hmm. before I go on to this, wanted to finish a thought on Edgar Cayce.
Sure.
One of the evidences for this database that exists beyond space-time, now, Edgar Cayce would diagnose people's illnesses from great distances. And so it was sort of a kind of a remote viewing. And people could say, though, that, well, you know, that's all amazing, but the person's condition is something that exists in the physical. And therefore, they could still try to argue a physical or a materialistic explanation. Problem is that he would also prescribe cures that didn't exist, and there was no evidence of it in the physical yet. And so he would actually derive information that would be relevant to that illness that didn't exist in the physical. And so that's a very important aspect of Edgar Cayce's work that we need to look at, that gives evidence to the existence of this body of information that, or what I call the supergeometry, that exists beyond the materialized physical.
When he gave those kinds of explanations, allow me to just interject briefly. Did he, for instance, give explanations or cures or something along the lines of that which could exist in our consensus reality but which had not been created at the time that he issued the statement? In other words, was he effectively predicting the future? Of course, remembering his moniker, the Sleeping Prophet, was he actually exhibiting telepathy, or was he exhibiting knowledge of something beyond even the physical when you say that?
Well, I think that he was looking at something beyond the physical, because the cure had not yet existed or materialized physically. But remember, and this is where it gets ambiguous and it's very difficult to stay online with it, that whatever cure he came upon that came from this Akasha, from this non-physical collection of information, had to be able to be materialized in our physical reality by the very structure of that body of information, because that structure of that body of information actually gave rise to the ordered materialization of the physical universe. Mm. Therefore, any piece of information that's in it is potentially materializable in our universe, because the information set would be identical. It would happen according to the same constraints, so to speak.
Right.
Just because it didn't exist yet but could exist, still doesn't still isn't satisfied by a purely materialistic explanation.
It's funny because UFOs come to mind yet again right there, though. Something that could exist but that at present does not exist. I see a few people in the chat room bringing that up, so I had to toss that in there. But I know you do address UFOs in your book just as well. I mean, I wonder if they fit into that. We could save that for a later time if you'd prefer.
Well, we could say something very quick. That
sure.
If we take away what I call the criminology of examining the evidence and the data, we tend to take a look at UFOs and paranormal phenomena with relation to the criminology or quote-unquote whodunit, that the paranormal phenomena seems to be primarily related to whatever kind of a ghost or intelligent entity might be causing it. UFOs, the same kind of thing. It becomes an integral part of how we try to understand it. And I know you've talked about this extensively.
Oh, yeah.
That just because we see a phenomena doesn't mean that we necessarily proves men in black or black ops or aliens or this kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
even though they could. But if we separate those out, go to the paranormal, ask all the ghosts to please go in the waiting room, ask all the UFO aliens on that, please walk out of the room for a minute, and let's just look at the physical phenomena themselves.
Yes.
We find that what is reported with UFO manifestations and observations are virtually identical to the same kinds of things that happen in haunted houses.
Interesting.
Only on a grander scale. So, now let's say, okay, let all the entities come out of the waiting room now and the aliens and all this, and enter a hypothesis that if these phenomena, these UFO phenomena, are actually intelligently designed craft, because of the forensics of the phenomena, because the paranormal and UFO evidence, the observations, are so closely linked, I would argue that if they are intelligently designed and controlled craft, that civilization, that intelligence, whatever it is, has actually discovered the secrets behind the mechanics of paranormal phenomena and have built technology based on them.
Wow. You know, it's wonderful to hear somebody else say what I've said, and I, again, as a brief aside, I hope not to make too many of these, you know, little pit stops along the way, but I have to ask you, because I know it's happened to me, how often are you ridiculed when you are going on a program, and it's a paranormal-themed program, and you say, in order to understand ghostly phenomenon, we have to put the ghosts in the waiting room and we have to put them aside and say, let's not go about this like we're studying spirits of the dead. Let's study, as you termed it, the forensics of the phenomenon. I mean, you know, for instance, I have said that it's interesting that when we define a ghost is not an apparition from the future. An apparition exists as the holdover from a physical being who has come and gone on this earth and the spirit lives on. But it's interesting to me because, I mean, that you cannot discuss the nature of, you know, life, death, and the afterlife, the potential for there being a soul and some intelligent quantity that exists apart from the physical body. You can't discuss that, to my way of thinking, without getting into the realm of discussing time. And, of course, what Stephen Hawking had called the thermodynamic arrow of time. In other words, it's interesting that we don't have apparitions of the future. Time flows in a certain direction, and our perception of ghostly phenomenon seems to occur in accordance with that thermodynamic arrow of time. Now, one might argue that if UFOs were to be likened to any kind of a technology emanating from some temporal point on down the road, i.e. the future, as we would perceive it, maybe UFOs could be those apparitions from the future that I'm hinting at here. But it's interesting to me, though, that certain phenomena can literally, I mean, it's said to be impossible. A ghost can't exist. A UFO can't exist. And yet, these things seem to conform also to thermodynamic laws and principles that govern our universe. That right there is indicative of something a little deeper to me. I find that very interesting. But are you ridiculed when you go on programs and you try and point that out to people and they say, oh, you're taking away our sacred cow. You're not letting us talk about our ghosts. You're not letting us carry on our exorcisms, you know, and our ghost hunts. And then all of a sudden it becomes not a ghost hunt, but a witch hunt. And Thomas Fusco is the witch. I don't take it that you float like wood or you know, anyway, to make a Monty Python joke. So how often are you attacked when you try and put these ideas out to people, Tom?
Most of the time, no. Most of the hosts are very receptive.
Yeah.
And they're very curious and interested and fascinated by the different perspective I bring to the field. But there are a small handful that their beliefs evolve or revolve around certain concepts that if you disprove them or discredit them, it shakes their foundation from where they look at things. Now, normally in the paranormal field, just like you know in most alternative fields, people come in and talk about opinions. And I call most of it metaphysical fluff and paranormal pulp. And the thing is that it's just as sensible or nonsensical as what everybody else is saying. So everybody looks at it and says, well, that's just their opinion and this is that person's opinion. And they all accept it because they're all basically doing the same thing. But when somebody comes along and says, hey, I've got a very logical system, and this is what's going on, and this is why, and this is how it all ties in together, and I can explain all the pertinent questions presented in a very consistent way, and moreover make predictive experiments, that if you conducted this experiment, you'd find this, and if you conducted that, you'd find that, and so on. That's when it becomes very threatening, because people hear it and say, oh my God, this is so convincing. I've never heard anything like that. And that's when people can't normally just say, oh, that's just another opinion. I don't have to pay attention to it. And I've actually been on some interviews where the host actually got hostile and began to try to attack me in terms of these ideas. And what's comical is every time somebody's tried to do that, all they did was made a fool of themselves.
I've heard some of those interviews, by the way.
They demonstrated that they were the ones that really didn't know what they were talking about.
Right. Oh, you know, this is what I love, too. I am a certified card-carrying know-it-all, but I always learn so much from you when we have these conversations. But what you're saying, nonetheless, and I have to be the radio host here for a moment, Tom, what you're saying is controversial. So for those of you out there in the listening audience, I want to address specifically our live listenership in the chat room right now, and those of you who'd like to email me at a later time, info@graylianreport.com. What do you think? Do you think that what Tom proposes here, essentially, and I don't want to misquote him, but I'm going to be very careful in stating that the deconstruction of certain existing paradigms to make room for a new conceptual model underlying what we may perceive as the unexplained taking place in the universe around us. Is there a necessity for this? Or is it unwarranted? Is it dangerous? Your thoughts, those of you in the chat room and those of you in the listening audience who will download the podcast days after the fact, love to hear from you. We are talking with Thomas Fusco. Behind the Cosmic Veil is the book which seeks to understand a new vision of reality, a new paradigm, if you will, that merges science, the spiritual, and the supernatural. Before we go to break, actually, you know, Tom, we are up on a break, so just hang with me for a moment, because when we come back from this break, there's something very integral to this conversation that I think we have to get into and talk about, and that is what you just only begun to hint at a moment ago. You had said that you could predict certain phenomena and even maybe go so far as to predict the setup of certain experiments that could be carried out in order to test some of these supergeometric theories. So I want to get into how one does that, and I have a sneaking suspicion it's already been done. We're going to go all around the tree, around the table, pun intended, when we come back here in just a moment and talk with Tom Fusco about the experimental capacities. A fascinating conversation tonight on the Graylian Report. I'm your host, Micah Hanks. We'll catch you on the other side. Stay with us.
Hello.
Busy summer, huh? And it's only going to get busier. Thanksgiving's already right around the corner, and before you know it, we'll all be singing Jingle Bells. Don't you deserve a break? Well, this year, why not make it a winter vacation and join the Ancient Alien Cruise as it sets sail from Fort Lauderdale on January 9th, 2014. Kick things off with a private cocktail reception followed by lectures by some of the finest researchers in the field. Author and publisher David Hatcher Childress will be there, as well as Megalithomania's Hugh Newman, geologist and author Robert Schock, and yours truly, Micah Hanks, host of the Micah Hanks program on KGRA Radio. But you don't just have to sit and listen. This cruise will present a one-of-a-kind opportunity to meet your hosts, discuss mysteries of the ancient past, dine with the speakers aboard one of the ship's fine restaurants, and even engage in land excursions to ancient sites. Broaden your horizons while taking a little time off and enjoy watching the sunset over the high seas. Visit AncientAlienCruise.com or call 1-877-642-4308 and reserve your cabin today before time runs out. Visit AncientAlienCruise.com.
Today, you ate Greek yogurt, took the train, you planned to work out, skipped it. You did all those things that one normally does the day before a devastating earthquake. You never know when the day before is the day before. Prepare for tomorrow at ready.gov/today. That's ready.gov/today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Hi folks, Micah here with your Paradigm Symposium ticket update, now available, day passes. That's right, day passes for the one and only Paradigm Symposium 2013. It's a one-of-a-kind event. You don't want to miss it. That's going to be in historic St. Paul, Minnesota at the Union Depot this October 17th through the 20th. Again, day passes are now available. Just visit ParadigmSymposium.com for details. In this article, this fella makes the case that UFO believers are all airheads, but the entire thing's based on the misunderstanding of what the term UFO means in the first place.
This is Micah Hanks.
I couldn't tell you if alien abductions actually occur. I couldn't tell you if UFOs are actually responsible for cattle mutilations. But as long as the media can treat this like a circus, these subjects will never be addressed in a serious forum.
The Micah Hanks radio program.
When are people going to wake up?
On the Global Radio Alliance.
I'm telling you, the answers are out there, but you got to know the right place to look. And you have to present the information that you find in a credible, consistent manner.
Sundays at 8 p.m. Eastern, only on the Global Radio Alliance.
Subjecting ourselves to the mysteries of time and space, opening new paradigms and tossing out no babies with the bathwater, but certainly questioning those things that we've left behind us. I'm Micah Hanks. This is the Graylian Report. Welcome back to the program. So elated to be here with you tonight. Cosmic love to all my friends out there in Gradioland. It doesn't matter whether you are tuning in live or you are listening after the fact via the iTunes podcast. And the simple reason for that is because, my friends, the more you begin to understand the nature of space-time, the less you have to worry about the problems inherent to temporality. And that's what's so beautiful about what we do. It is a timeless kind of an exercise in exploring the unexplained that we engage in here on the Graylian Report. Now, where we left off, our incredibly fantastic guest, one of my favorite guys in the world, Tom Fusco, who still, I see, he's carrying on. The man never sleeps, because here's what happens. We go to break, and Tom Fusco's in the chat room chatting it up with people, and he's still answering questions, and I'm poking fun at him in there. So, you know, that's what I admire about someone like Tom. Tom, you have an absolute passion for what you do, and that is something that I think should be prerequisite to anyone who involves themselves in this field.
Yeah, you have to really believe in what you're doing and know that you have something, and that certainly carries you the where you need to go.
But you don't always know that you have something. Certainly there are moments of doubt. There have been points along the path leading up to right now where you've had to say, look in the mirror and say, God, I'm just full of it. What kept you going? Why are you here today?
Oh, Well, I could tell you, Micah, I didn't publish until I had gotten that squared away, where every possible conceivable question that I could throw at this theoretical model gave me back an answer that was relevant, that was meaningful, and that was consistent with the laws and principles that this model dictates. And so consequently, I didn't come out of the closet until I was ready to take on all comers.
Folks, I told you there would be some revelations on this program tonight. I'm sorry, Tom. Anyway.
Oh, my. Hey, let's talk about the definition of the paranormal again.
Yeah, I tell you what. Yeah, this program in itself could be a definition of the paranormal. Do you actually want to give a definition of the paranormal, or you was that part of the joke? Now I'm the butt of the joke, aren't I?
Well, actually, I didn't actually get to finish that thought.
Finish that thought.
Like you said, Micah, when you and I start having a conversation, we can go on for hours and hours.
I know. I love that. I relish that. I just want you to know that, and I want to thank you as my friend and also as our guest tonight on behalf of all of the people out there listening. You know, it means so much to me and to people who tune into this program to have people like you who want to spend time and talk about this sort of thing. But that said, you know, let's get back to that definition. Go ahead.
Okay. As I was saying, we had to come up with a scientifically relevant and meaningful definition for the paranormal to try to confine it some way in an understandable form. And so what I came to realize is that the definition of paranormal phenomena are those observations that occur by way of what we call non-locality or non-local causality. And that's a very common term in physics. That's what makes it very useful for us. And I'll give you an example. If we talk about what is commonly called a disembodied voice, mm-hmm. or what I would call a paranormal voice, in a normal voice, what we have is the propagation of sound from a compression wave, an acoustical compression wave, that is vibrating the air column that's connected to our eardrums or to a recording microphone diaphragm. And those parts also vibrate with that vibrating column of air. And then our brains, or in the recorder, it's electronics, translates that into meaningful sound. All of that is normal and typical. The problem is with paranormal is that there's no local cause connected to the effect. So in a normal voice, as you and I are talking, we actually have a set of physical vocal cords that is directly physically connected locally to the air column that's vibrating. In a paranormal voice, the effect is normal, but there's no physical cause locally connected to the effect.
Right.
That's what makes it paranormal. And it also makes it scientifically relevant. The wonderful thing about that, Micah, is that we can begin to take that paranormal definition and apply it to other fields. We see non-local causality all the time in quantum physics. And we also see it, and we'll have to get into this maybe on another show, in gravity. Actually, the force that we know as gravity appears to work non-locally because we've never found a physical constituent of it. So subsequently, what we do then, it turns things around on its head. So instead of saying, well, you know, quantum physics and these other things look like the paranormal, we turn it around and say, according to this definition, no, quantum physics is paranormal. So we have expanded the realm of what paranormal phenomena is with that definition.
Wow. You know, let me ask you this really quick also. Throughout the course of this conversation, time is precious. Are you interested in taking any phone calls at all?
Well, yeah, I could take phone calls. That'd be fine. You know what I say in my media kit, as long as it's respectful and consistent with the theme, that's fine. Somebody calls in and wants to have a go at me, or wants to hijack the show, that'll be handled differently.
That's right. That's we don't tolerate that kind of thing around here anyhow. The only problem is I've got two phone lines. You're on one, and right now if I want to take calls, I will have to open up the secondary line, which we could certainly do, or we could switch you to another line. So I tell you what, let's do this. Let's go ahead and let's keep talking, but then I'm going to allot a secondary portion of this program at the top of the next hour. Since we had a little bit of an operational hiccup that took us off the air for just a few minutes, I'm going to carry into the next hour. Tom, if that's okay with you, what we'll do is at the top of the hour, we'll take any calls that people may have. So folks out there, if you'd like to call in and talk with Thomas Fusco, what we will do is we will take those calls at the top of the next hour. So please hold your calls until that's going to be at 9:59 p.m. Eastern time here on Tuesday night. That way we will get the majority of the conversation out of the way. Then we will set aside a little time for those phone calls if anyone wants to get into this. Otherwise, Tom and I will wrap things up. I know this because there are people already calling in now, but I don't want to interrupt the conversation at this point. So if you will, hold those calls if you can. If you'll call us back at the top of the hour, we will fit those in. Okay, so that said, Tom.
That sounds great.
Excellent. Yeah, and hopefully those folks who are calling in, who are obviously they're listening. So if you're hearing me now, let's hold those calls just another 25, 24 minutes or so. We'll get you in there, okay? We may even blow through that final break and just extend the hour completely and start taking those phone calls. Okay, now that said, there have been some experiments that have been conducted. And I know that that you have discussed with me specifically David Roundtree and how and how some of your own predictions about the experimental models have actually led to discussion with guys like David Roundtree and the justification for some of your theories based on the expectations that you have put forth in books like the Behind the Cosmic Veil, juxtaposed against experiments that seem to show the same sort of thing. Let's get into a little of that, because this is what takes place outside the actual book. This is what has come together since the authorship and the publication of the book. And this is what's always fascinating about being an author, is you write a book, but the research doesn't end there. So let's pick up where the book ends. What has happened since then?
Let me give a little bit of a background to that. It'll take a few minutes, but okay, it's important to lay that foundation for people. One of the distinctions with a true theory, a scientific theory, as opposed to all the other things that most people are exposed to in these alternative fields that are actually hypothesis and supposition and speculation and sometimes plain BS, that is presented as theories, but they really aren't. One of the characteristics of a scientific theory is that it imagines predictive experiments. In other words, it gives a model of what it believes is going on and says, well, if this is true, then we should conduct this experiment and find this particular result. And we should conduct this experiment and we predict we'll get this result. This is how you test a theory, and my theory makes such predictions. Now, in order to understand the nature of the predictions, we have to take a look at a very simple model as to what I say is going on in paranormal phenomena. And let's go back to talking about the universe being a manifestation or a materialization of information. Now, when information materializes, when it's in a material form, one of the characteristics that it takes on is that the space-time surrounding any materialized object is bent and curved and twisted. This was one of the amazing aspects of Einstein's relativistic theories.
Mm-hmm.
The space was actually a substantive field that was defined and characterized by four independent variables, height or length, width, depth, and time. It was not the empty nothingness that Newton thought it was, and that everybody followed up until Einstein. And so if we have a materialization of information, we are going to have a bending of space-time that occurs around it that should be measurable and observable. And in fact, it was that predictive experiment that Einstein said, if you take a photograph of a solar eclipse, when the starlight adjacent to the solar disk becomes visible when it's completely covered, and then compare that photograph to a photograph of the same section of sky without the solar disk in a certain vicinity around that disk, you're going to measure a 1.75 degree variation in the starlight. And when they found that, it changed the world. It turned them into the most greatest thinker that ever existed, only when that experiment was conducted. So, if paranormal phenomena is a materialization of information, then we should find an associated expansion and bending of space-time that precedes the actual information materializing. So one of the things I've done was to divide paranormal phenomena into two classes, primary and secondary. The secondary paranormal effects are the actual changes that are occurring in the environment associated with a local expansion of space-time. And the primary paranormal effect is the actual materialization of information that is coming in from above space-time and enters subliminally in these bubbles of space-time, what I call a differential field bubble. And it sounds like it's getting a little complex, but the point I'm trying to make is, is that we should be able to conduct experiments that would show results proving that local space-time is expanding. And they would be very specific characteristics. They wouldn't be the kind of things that would be anticipated by other theoretical models. And so one of the things that we would see is that physical content, what Einstein called physical content, let's say in a haunted house we're talking about air, air molecules and atoms. When space is artificially expanded, or locally expanded, I should say, that the area around that expanding bubble is going to be crushed and twisted, and that's going to excite the molecules or the electrons in the molecules of the air that are occupying that crushed space. When those electrons jump up into their higher orbits from that excitement, what we would have, this model would predict, an electromagnetic field that would seemingly appear out of midair. And that's exactly what we find. Now, what goes up must come down. And so when electrons drop back down from these higher orbits into their lower orbits, they emit a couple of different things. One of the things they can emit is heat energy. So this model would predict that under certain circumstances, a thermal camera would pick up a heat signature from something that doesn't appear to be physically there.
Right. And boy, where have we had that happen?
And another thing that it would do is that these electrons can also emit photons. So here we have a bubble of space-time jacketed in an electromagnetic field being created by the torsion of the space surrounding that bubble and the molecules that are occupying that torsion space, and it's emitting photons. And what I say is this is the world's first scientific model of what paranormal investigators call a luminous orb.
Oh, man.
And even what ufologists call luminous orbs. This would be a physical model that would produce that effect and a theoretical foundation for that model to be occurring. And one of the other interesting things about this is that when this bubble expands, it would create a temporary vacuum inside of it before the laws of equilibrium catch up and allow the physical content with its thermal energy to occupy the vacuum that's being created inside the bubble. But temporarily, as that bubble expands, we would have a cold spot, which is another thing that's recorded. And this is an explanation, this model would explain why we could have a heat signature and a cold spot at the exact same moment. Where other ideas that the ghost is draining energy in order to physically manifest, and that's why we have a cold spot, that doesn't make sense. It's not consistent with what's observed.
Right.
Now, here's where the predictions come in. one of the things, because these things have already been measured, but one of the aspects of expanding space is that we would have the emergence of an additional gravitational field independent of the Earth's gravitational field, and it would be multi-directional. It would be measurable on three axes, whereas where we stand on the Earth, the gravitational field is basically one direction pointing down to the center of the Earth. Now, this experiment has already been conducted by David Roundtree, and he indeed found the emergence of gravitational fields on three axes independent of the gravitational field of the Earth at the moment of emergence of a paranormal event. Another thing that it predicted is that materializing information inside of that bubble would cause that bubble to begin to vibrate and conform to the materializing information. So if we have a vocalization, which is a collection of information, that would be materializing inside this bubble, it would cause the outside of the space-time bubble to vibrate with the frequency and amplitude of that materializing vocalization. That, in turn, would agitate the electromagnetic field surrounding the bubble and send out an electromagnetic compression wave carrying the information of that vocalization. It would propagate through space. It would hit a microphone, the diaphragm of a recording microphone. It would completely bypass the diaphragm because it's not acoustic and would induce itself directly on the copper coils.
Right.
All right. Then that would be transferred into the electronics, and it would be translated into a voice that we could hear, and we have an EVP because it's an electromagnetic phenomenon. It's picked up on a recorder, but it cannot be acoustically heard.
Yeah, and for people who would question that, by the way, again, I have to give kudos to Joshua Warren, you know, a good friend of mine who years and years ago showed me a simple experiment where he basically bypassed the speakers on a stereo system and instead plugged in a laboratory-grade copper coil where he essentially broadcast the sound information. It was not audible to the ear because it wasn't actually resonating acoustically, but was being broadcast electromagnetically. Now, if you held a simple cardioid microphone up next to that, your ear wouldn't hear anything. But when you recorded with that microphone, exactly what you are saying would happen, Tom, is what happened, and you would hear on the recording the music as though you had been able to hear it in the room with you, and the closer the microphone gets to the source, the louder it gets, because the electromagnetic energy being broadcast from that coil is able to resonate with the actual microphone, even if it cannot acoustically be recorded by the microphone. And that's fascinating to me, because that just proves in a very simple way that there are things that could interact with technology that we create that the human mind or body or the senses may not be directly capable of observing.
Yes. And these were, now people need to know, I am not a paranormal investigator. I've never been one. So when I was predicting these things, I was working in a vacuum, so to speak. I had no idea that people like David Roundtree and Joshua Warren had already conducted such experiments. I had no idea. David Roundtree conducted his in 2005. The other thing that it predicted was that you would be able to record an EVP with a microphone in a vacuum, and you would be able to record an EVP with the diaphragm of the dynamic microphone surgically removed. And Roundtree had done both of these experiments. I had absolutely no knowledge of them. The other thing it predicts is this. If we are working at something that would occur at a higher energy level, and some of that is still a little indistinct, we're still working on that, but what would happen is that this vibrating bubble of space-time that is vibrating according to the frequency and amplitude of the materializing vocalization would actually agitate it, be strong enough to agitate the air, and it would create an acoustical compression wave that would hit our eardrums, and we would actually hear it as a disembodied voice.
Hmm.
So in this case, instead of a set of physical vocal cords, the actual surface of space-time is acting like a speaker.
Oh, wow. Wow, what a concept. It, you know, it's...
And on. if you were, and what I argue is this, if you were to speak to a physicist who was extremely versed in relativistic theory, and perhaps with a little bit of a second in Kaluza-Klein theory, and you ask them if we could artificially bend space-time inside of a house with all the physical content that was there, what would be the kind of effects that you would see? And you would have to stifle yourself while you would watch that scientist begin to list off the kinds of happenings that we see in haunted houses, and he would have no idea he was describing a haunted house to you.
But why do these things take place in the haunted house? I mean, I don't believe that it is the haunted house that presents what occurs. And I don't know that I could even say that the manifestations observed in a so-called haunted house are necessarily spirits of the dead. There's something going on, but why does it occur, and why is it specific to certain experience or certain places? Typically, if we are to believe the literature, why is it that places that have history attached with them, you know, historic sites, battlefields, yeah, things like that, why do those locations have a propensity for this kind of phenomenon?
I have a speculation, and I'm going to say it's a speculation.
Sure.
But it's based on my theoretical model. What I believe is that the human psyche, the human brain, not only has the ability to materialize information by affecting it through the manipulation of physical substances by its hands, but the evidence of parapsychology shows that it could directly affect the physical reality around it in a direct phenomena that basically it's generating information that then affects the physical space-time around it. What I think is that under strong emotion, this is a speculation, that it actually fatigues and damages the fabric of space-time in that local space. And so what we have is like if we had an old inner tube to a tire and there were weak spots in it, when we filled it with air, the weak spots would form bubbles and they would blow out of the tire. They would expand out of the tire. And I think that these places of strong emotion have actually damaged space-time to make it weak and pliable so that these particular bubbles open up far more easily. And the information about the events that occurred there are contiguous to the physical materializations, because the information is connected to that physical place that materializes it from it. And so that information begins to drift in more readily because the fabric of space-time more easily bends because it's damaged.
That is a brilliant analogy that you use there. Now, in that same mode of thought, could we also suppose then that if, for instance, trauma or emotion could damage the fabric of space-time, that in one's own reality on a daily basis, emotion could influence the fabric of space-time from day to day, and that this is maybe the reason why certain people who have engaged in magical ritual ceremonies and practices have achieved results, that people who are absolutely positively in love will begin to start seeing incredible things happen, strange synchronicities, and maybe even telepathic things. I've experienced that. Or that a person who prays and puts their full intent on goodness and emotion behind the prayer, that they will also achieve an effect. Are these things, within our realm of speculation, I'm fully comfortable with defining this as speculation and continuing on those grounds, but do things like prayer and being in love and these sorts of things, do those also operate in ways similar to what could cause a haunting in terms of an emotional discharge from the conscious brain that is literally interacting with and possibly disrupting the information system stored within space-time?
Well, it's actually manipulating or changing or adding to that information. The beauty of this model is that it finally allows us, in a scientifically relevant way, to understand the possible realities to all the kinds of things that you mentioned. I mean, let's think about it. Prayer. Here is something where we are actually constructing a pattern of information that has a specific characteristic to it that is relevant to the way that the universe is put together. We're mixing it with strong emotion, and we're mixing it with faith. Faith is certainly something that contributes to our ability to create things that didn't exist before. So why wouldn't that information have a tendency to drop down into space-time from where it's being projected to and begin to materialize in the physical reality? I'll tell you an interesting experiment. I think we may still have time for it.
We do.
This is something many, many, many years ago. I used to be in a telemarketing business, and we worked in boiler rooms. And we had a manager who was very metaphysical with his way of looking at things. We all sat together with our desk pushed together, and we were calling all kinds of businesses all day long trying to sell them things. And what he said is that if this whole room believed that at 5 o'clock on Friday, if we had a certain amount of business on the board, that a light bulb that we have in a socket will explode. And 1 week we tried this experiment, and that we did come up with that business, and damn it, at 5 o'clock that light bulb didn't break.
It did.
And I, yes. Yes.
Wow.
I don't talk about these things too often because sometimes on the air people, oh, this guy's a real nut, you know?
I don't think so. I don't think that's nutty at all. Carl Jung talked about things like that happen. He was having, if you'll allow me really quickly, I want to share a story because this is so similar to that, Tom. And these things, these are the very essence of this experience and this process. We often talk about the experience on this program. You're outlining for us the process here. Carl Jung said one time he was sitting down and speaking with Sigmund Freud, and that he was describing the way that a person could conceptualize something and build up an energy potential and actually carry out a physical effect in the environment around them. And as he's describing this, this huge chest of drawers next to him just emits a loud pop, and Freud is kind of startled by it. He looks over and he says, you know, what was that? And Jung says, I did that and I'll do it again. And then the wood popped again and it made this loud noise. Now, Jung believed that these were, of course, you know, somehow attached to the synchronicity component. As I've alluded, you know, I've been in positions, you know, where in a heightened state of consciousness, not an altered per se, but I think a heightened state of consciousness that can be elicited by being truly in love, or by being connected with the world in a special way. I call it on this program cosmic love, attempting to consciously connect with the world around you in a unique way. You can, for whatever reason, affect physical changes in the environment. It's a very strange thing. And I think that there are even some documented cases about this. So a story like that to me, my friend, you know, you're in good company with this audience. There may not be any way plausible that we can at present define scientifically what exactly is going on. I think that your theories, however, are a step in that direction and getting closer than a lot of people are, simply because A, you are a man who adheres to scientific principles and very, very clearly defined models when you articulate what your theories are and what your feelings are about what is underlying the physical phenomena we observe, but also you're open-minded enough to go there. And no person who thought only and exclusively inside the box ever pushed the boundaries far enough to see what was going on outside.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just it. You have to be willing to go outside the box. And if you can't get outside the box, you keep pushing on the walls until they burst open. That's what
one
I believe.
One of the things that I want to mention real quick that has been the problem understanding this telekinetic effect, or even levitations, or even teleportations at paranormal sites, is that we have always looked at it physically. We've always tried to look for a source of energy that would be physically acting upon these objects, and it's never there. And what this model shows us is that because every object is surrounded by a pocket of space-time, and that space-time can be manipulated from the superphysical, or supergeometric realm, all you would have to do is manipulate that space-time bubble to create the physical effect without having to have physical energy acting upon the object locally.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's fascinating to me. It really is. Now, Tom, if you got a moment, we may go ahead and try taking some phone calls. Do you have a little time to spare with us?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, okay, we're going to go ahead and go to the phone lines then. I tell you what, we'll take a very short break first, and then when we come back from this break, we will. If you would like to get in on the conversation here with Tom Fusco, we will take a few calls from the listenership, because I tell you, you know, I want to give this guy time to talk. Tom is one of those special guests that you don't get to talk with just every day. And, you know, when we get into this kind of a conversation, inevitably people are going to have their own questions and their own perspectives. But I think that if we work together, we might come to a fuller understanding. Maybe that's how we do it. So, okay, stand by. We're going to go a little long for this week's edition because we had a little hiccup earlier. I'm Micah Hanks. This is the Graylian Report. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the program. I'm Micah Hanks. This is the Graylian Report. So glad to have you with us tonight. Another fascinating installment of the program. Speaking with our guest, Thomas Fusco, who's been kind enough to join us for a longer than ordinary interview. You know, it's guys like Tom, though, that make me want to take this program back to the format. You know, those of you who've been with us for a long time, you may remember we used to actually do this program for a full 3 hours, and it's nights like tonight that remind me why I initially did this program as a three-hour broadcast. Now, that said, we are going to feature a few calls from listeners right now. Tom, you don't mind taking a couple of calls here, do you?
No, absolutely. I'd love to hear what people have to say.
All right, fantastic. I know we've got one gentleman who's been trying to get in for quite a while here, Mr. Reptile, who joins us live from Wisconsin. Reptile, are you with us?
Well, hello. Thank you.
Excellent. Go ahead with your question there.
Thank you for taking the call, Thomas. I asked a question in chat a little while ago in regards to faith and what is your beliefs in how that works. We know it works. There's been scientific studies showing that, you know, a stranger can pray for a stranger's better outcome in a medical situation, and it's been proven that that is reality. So what is the methodology, in your opinion, that makes that real?
Well, according to my theoretical model, it becomes, how would I say it? The definition that is in the Bible for faith, where it says the substance of things hoped for as a definition.
Hebrews 11:1.
Oh, there you go. Faith is the substance of things hoped for. And if we take a look at human achievement, anything that we have that really, almost any human achievement that's remarkable and noteworthy, involved the use of faith. The person and persons that invented these things and developed these things had a faith, they were working under a faith, that they would be able to achieve what was yet unseen. So
right, and I would agree, except for the point that the line is in there as yet. Oh, excuse me. The faith is the assured expectations of things hoped for, the evident demonstration of reality yet not beheld. So, if an outcome is beheld, that would negate faith. So somehow, strangers can have prayerful feelings for strangers, an outcome, and yet that outcome is real. Do you understand what I'm asking?
I think so, yes. And you're right. I mean, something that's already materialized doesn't involve faith to operate it, or to recognize it, or to reckon with it. But here's where we talk about human experience. Because remember, the foundations of science were a means to understand and define what we experience through our senses. That really is the foundation of science.
Isn't it the other way around? Don't we recognize what we know as science as an understanding of our experience or our ability to experience it? So don't you have that exactly backwards?
No. We experience things. We observe things. And we use science as a means to define it and understand it and to categorize it. So science becomes a tool that facilitates our understanding of what we experience. So Einstein actually said that experience, human experience, is the final judge of all scientific theories. And so when we talk about faith, although it's difficult to quantify or even qualify from a physical point of view, it is within the realm of human experience. And so subsequently, when we see this cause and effect of someone exercising faith and then according to a specific pattern of thought, of anticipation, of a prayer, so to speak, and then we see the manifestations of those things in the physical realm, our human experience tells us that faith does play a role in the creational process, even though we cannot yet quantify and qualify it scientifically.
Thank you for that question, by the way, Reptile. We appreciate you calling in. I hope that answers the question. I also want to put it out to folks that you can send us questions in the chat room just as well. And all you have to do if you're in the chat room is just send that question. You can private message me directly, or you can also just put it right out there in the open for everyone to see. Now, Tom, I wanted to ask one just as well, but first I'm going to give out the phone lines again for those who'd like to reach the program. We may even give out the secondary number here, but there are a variety of ways to reach the program. If you've got Skype, you can reach us on Skype at Graylian Report. Typically, you can reach us by phone at 828-398-4886. There's a secondary number that we're going to open up tonight as well, 828-338-0182. That secondary number, again, is 828-338-0182. We'll take another 10 or 15 minutes as time permits if we have any more questions that are coming in with Mr. Thomas Fusco. If for the time being, I would like to ask one myself. Now, Tom, when it comes down to where you hope to go with all of this and where you hope to be able to apply some of your theories, do you ever hope that at some point you will be able to initiate some actual experimentation in a laboratory, or are you already making headway in that area? In other words, do you hope to try and create some actual, construct some experiments that can be used to test these kinds of things? And if so, can that be done in a scientifically viable way at present?
Well, I think that the first thing that I believe were the easiest, the most expedient way to approach this is to make the necessary advances in paranormal research that will give us enough data to absolutely conclude that we have something going on that fits this model. And the reason why paranormal phenomena is important: when we observe our universe, we're observing everything pretty much in a fully materialized state. It's like I talk about standing on the side of a highway, superhighway, watching all the cars whiz by at 70 miles an hour. We are observing the fully materialized state of that transportation system. We don't get to see all the processes that went into making the cars, designing the cars, the histories of the cars, the people who drove them from their parking lots onto the highway, even the formation of the asphalt that constitutes the road service surface. We don't get to see these things. But there are certain areas in human observation where we do get to see them. One is quantum physics. One of them is the human psyche, where we see things spontaneously materialize. And the other area is paranormal phenomena. And that's where we see the materialization process occur in real time on a human scale, where it can be examined and studied. Once we get that down where we have enough replication to know that we definitely have something here, then we can begin to devise greater experiments that would crack the very code of creation itself. And once we do that, I anticipate being able to do whatever we imagine. Levitation, teleportation, anti-gravity, feeding the masses, limitless energy, free energy, medical miracles. If you think about all the kinds of phenomena that happen at a haunted site, and we were able to reproduce them and create these effects, but with a specific purpose in mind, we could literally accomplish whatever we could imagine in our brains.
And I believe that to an extent that's already the case. If it can be conceived of in the human mind, it has a physical counterpart, a component, which is both utterly terrifying and profoundly beautiful at once. You know, and I'll tell you this, and I've put this out to the listeners a few times in the past, I'll say it again here. I'm going to be a person one day. I know I'll be rich eventually on down the road.
That's faith.
What was that?
I said that's faith.
That is faith, isn't it? But I know I'm going to be wealthy because in addition to having faith, I am also a person who is motivated. You know, I know that I will enact a plan that will get me where I want to go. I have no alternative. I know I'll be there. And if I am so blessed as to get to that point, both with the help of the fantastic listenership of this program, the thousands who tune in on a weekly basis and who interact with me, who send me feedback, who listen, who occasionally who donate, those are always appreciated as well, the kind donations from people who help keep this ship afloat, but also from fantastic guests like Thomas Fusco here. If I ever get to that point, that sublime point where I have what would be virtually in our physical reality known as limited or limitless resources, you know, I'm going to call you up, Tom. I'm going to fly you to North Carolina, or I'm going to come down there, you know, to the Sunshine State where you are, and I'm gonna sit down with you for a week. We're going to design some of these experiments and try and get this stuff off the ground. That sounds like the silly, if anything, hopeful rambling of a dreamer. But I think that, again, in that realm of dreams, in that realm of what we perceive as the sleeping land of the impossible, we have the very embodiment of what not only could be, but eventually will be. And if that's not the case, if I'm wrong, ask why it wasn't the case for Arthur C. Clarke. Ask why it wasn't the case for Newton or Oppenheimer or Einstein. People who dream can actualize their dreams if they go about it in the right way. Tom, I hope one day on down the road you and I will have the mutuality and the ability to be able to share in the actualization of some of these dreams and the coming to a fuller understanding of the nature of space-time and the universe around us. It's a fascinating world in which we live, isn't it?
That would be wonderful. And sometimes people ask me, what do you want to do with this, all this? What's your goal?
Now, what do you want to do?
My goal is to change the world. And such experiments can be conducted. I mean, one of the predictive experiments that I talk about in my theory is that there's no such thing as what the physicists call supersymmetry, something that's been accepted for over 50 years. People can look that up on the web. It's spelled exactly what it sounds, how it sounds, supersymmetry. And the reports out of CERN, the Large Hadron Collider, towards the end of last year, finally seems to confirm that there is no such thing as supersymmetry. So my model predicted something that flew in the face of established physics for five decades, and my model has the predictive results are coming through, whereas their models are proving to be wrong.
Tom, a quick prediction before I let you go. Where will we be if you had to guesstimate 1 year from today? Will we see anything incredible in the coming year? Where are we right now on our scientific frontiers? Or do you have even a hunch, on a gut feeling, on an instinct, that we're going to see anything in the next year that will be revelatory?
My goodness, Micah, I don't know what to say about that. The only thing, I don't have anything specific in mind, but what I can say is this. I believe that science today, particularly physics, is in an age of what I call the age of denial. And what I mean by denial is that they're still working desperately to try to explain every observation that we have by a material paradigm. The breakthrough is going to come through when physics finally accepts that reality is more than just the physical. And that's going to open up all kinds of avenues of thoughts and discoveries. And to me, that would be the final frontier of science. Oh. That's where it ultimately will arrive.
That final frontier, the one that we all seek, and of course the one that I feel we come if only micro inches. I don't know if a micro inch is an actual measurement, but nonetheless, even if we only come in little tiny measurements closer to it, each time we talk with Thomas Fusco, we nonetheless help close that distance a bit more. Tom, thank you so much. Tell folks where they can find out about you online, where they can find your book and what you have in store for us. Next time, we'll be talking to you here on the Grayling Report.
Well, everything about the book and about my work and where I'll be appearing next and related articles and, of course, where to find the book, that's how you get the information and that's how I pay the bills. All that can be found at www.cosmicveil, spelled V-E-I-L, cosmicveil.com.
Excellent. Thomas Fusco, ladies and gentlemen, those of you who will be attending the Paradigm Symposium, joining us there in St. Paul, Minnesota, just in under 2 weeks, you're going to get to meet Tom. Tom and I will probably be off in a corner someplace having coffee and getting into very, very in-depth discussions on the nature and the fabric of the universe as we know it. Tom, I look forward, my friend, as always, to seeing you again. And, of course, thank you tonight for joining us on this fantastic edition of the Grayling Report. You made the program. I hope you'll come back again soon.
Thanks so much for having me on, Mike. I appreciate it.
It's our honor, privilege, and pleasure as always, my friend. That's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the program. I do hope indeed to see many of you up there in Minneapolis and St. Paul, the Twin Cities, here within just a couple of weeks. And, you know, looking at the calendar here from the Grayling Bunker for just a moment, I'll tell you, we are getting so close. In fact, I fly out next Tuesday, so we may have to have an abbreviated podcast, or at very least a podcast that either is going to be live from the scene or a little earlier. And I'll be there for a week, but no doubt you'll be hearing from me there at Paradigm Symposium. And all of you out there who will be at the event, I'll be seeing you there. Adam in the chat room, I know he'll be there, in addition to a few others. Looking forward to it as always. And on behalf of all of us here at Grayling International, in the meantime, my friends, Caleb Hanks, Matthew Oakley, John Anderson, Dick Oakley, Tyler Pittman, and yours truly, Micah Hanks, the Mouth of the South, I bid you adieu, my friends. Listen, stay tuned, because in the coming weeks, there will be many, many fascinating and exciting things to share. In the meantime, consider visiting graylingreport.com. You can find the donations button up there at the top, and if you can't donate, that's okay. Send me an email, info@micahanks.com or info@graylingreport.com. Either way, we'll reach me directly in the bunker. Hope to hear from you, and until next time, my friends, stay strange out there. We'll talk to you again soon.
Been listening to the Grayling Report with Micah Hanks. Any rebroadcast or duplication of this program or program content without express written permission is strictly prohibited. The Grayling Report, in direct cooperation with the internet website graylingreport.com.